let me thank all of you for again showing up. I feel really in these sanghas we are forming something like a community of experience, because the three ways of making an experience. One is by making the direct experience with our senses. And the second way is an experience which we gain when we listen to what someone else experienced. That leaves or can leave an impression in us. And the third type of experience is an experience that is really beyond our senses, an experience which is difficult to make even when we listen to someone else. And that third type of experience is a transcendental experience. And exactly about this type of experience I want to speak. And I was thinking today, if a spiritual experience can't really be transferred to someone by talking about it, if it still defies all descriptions, if a transcendental experience is inexplicable and therefore it can only be made by the person, then what am I doing here talking about such experience? Now, I hope that today I will be able to answer this. My answer will be yes, although spiritual experiences defy description, when we are blessed by a saint, these experiences which we hear can all of a sudden become manifested in us, almost like a firework that is kindled by a person, so that the please help me, the firecrackers and the various special features, they are ignited and come up in us. The blessings of the saints make inexplicable things manifest in our heart so that we can see. It's not surprising then that in this work called the Bhagavatam, there is one verse that is repeated verbatim, usually in a spiritual script, a scripture. You will not find texts that are repeated. They are always fresh and always new. But there's one which is repeated, and I will read to you. Tulayama lavenapi. It means even a moment, even a second of association with a saintly person cannot compare with the benefits of attaining the heavens, the heavenly planets, entering into the Brahman light, the big white energy. Indeed, for persons who are destined to die, the association with saintly people offers ashishaha. Ashisha means the greatest of benedictions. What is this greatest of benediction? Well, the greatest of benediction is something which the world cannot give us. It's also something that the world cannot take away from us once we have it. the greatest of benedictions is spiritual awakening, when the soul, which is at the moment confined in illusions and material misconceptions, awakens to its true and everlasting identity and is able to act from that. It's total liberation from the pangs and the laws of material existence. This benediction is possible through through saints. My dear everyone, we have a problem. We need to address it here. We are often good in knowing what to do, but bad at doing it. Rasanath, Radha Bhakti, Vipin, Michael, and our esteemed MC, can you relate to this? We are good at knowing what to do, but bad at doing it. This is a problem, a disconnect between what we know and what we do. This problem is addressed in spiritual, in real spiritual philosophy, or real spiritual life, or real spiritual instruction. Sanatana Goswami, he had learned from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said at the end, after having heard for a couple of days the really highest spiritual knowledge, he said, what you have expressed to me, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is like an ocean of knowledge. How can I capture this in my heart and then do it? Therefore, I request you that you give me your blessing and you say, let whatever was explained manifest in your heart. Here is the solution. If we have knowledge that is only stored in our head, we could call it theoretical knowledge. That is not good enough to make us overcome this gap. That's not good enough to make substantial changes in our thinking and acting. The knowledge must come from our head to our heart. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami says, you have explained all this, I have heard you, but now you must bless it, that bless me, that this knowledge becomes manifest in my heart. What did he mean exactly? What's the difference between head knowledge and heart knowledge? I want to give you an example from my own work. In the past, I had offered many seminars. I still do this, I should say. And one of my seminars was called the Forgiveness Seminar. I could see that many people were harboring, let us say, ill feelings towards others, unpleasant memories of unresolved activities, and they were suffering from it. Only if they would learn to forgive the other could they let go of what was creating harm in or a heavy burden in the heart. Perhaps you can relate to this, that there are some people to whom you were even close in the past, but then something unfortunate happened so that the relationship became interrupted and paused, perhaps, and you have not really been able to forgive them. So when I gave this forgiveness seminars, many people came to my seminars who had heard about forgiveness, dāya, compassion, what other terms they were familiar with, karuna, mercy. They had heard about it. But since it was had knowledge and had not touched their heart and changed their heart, they could not give up the bitterness, the resentment, and the sometimes envy which they felt towards these people, which continued to give them trouble and make them give them pain in their heart. So it became clear to me as a seminar giver, unless I give people a way to realize, to bring what is in the head to the heart, or let me express this less romantically, unless I can help them to transform theoretical knowledge which they had heard into knowledge that really touched them, or should we say that really impacted them on a deeper level, they would not be able to change their hearts. They would not be able to climb over the walls that they had erected in their minds, and so on, and they would remain captured. So it became clear to me that I must give people a way so that what is in the head comes into the heart and changes them. This is an introduction to my next spiritual experience that I would like to change with you. I met a person who helped me cross this gap from the head to the heart, or some don't like this romantic description, heart, they feel, ooh. Let us say this gap between theoretical knowledge and realized, impactful, living knowledge. I met a person who could give this to me. My dear people, in my own experience, I always had a great difficulty to see and practically relate to God in a deity form, a form that is worshipped on the altar. I had been influenced by Christian philosophy. You should not make an image of God. You know, that's not done. I had heard about the movement in Christianity. They were called the Iconoclasts. These were people from the Protestantic Christianity who had run into the Catholic churches, and they had torn down and destroyed the works of art which depicted something transcendental, because they were convinced, yes, it is sinful to make an image of God, that God can never be represented. I could not grasp this point intellectually. I could not grasp it devotionally. I could not relate to it on a real personal level. Yet I was a monk who was taking part of temple services where some of the worship is done to the divinity on the altar. I was conflicted. I said, I can't force myself to believe something, but yet I see everyone is so happy in the worship here, and I'm part of it, but I can't relate to it. Dilemma. Then then that changed. It was when I was visiting the Himalayas. There was a time in my life where you would find me every year in the Himalayas, trekking up Mother Ganga's riverbed, taking in the serene atmosphere of these mountains, some of them sacred mountains. So I had decided to go with four of my very good monk friends on a pilgrimage to the source of Mother Ganga, where the Ganga comes out from underneath a glacier. And I hope you understand my English. Glacier?
Yes.
Glacier. With full force, and then this river would later nourish a lot of civilizations. A lot of civilizations has grown next to the Ganga, like you know, we know the great civilizations. Another one has grown next to Nile, the river Nile, and it would nourish many fields. Millions of people would take their bath. So I wanted to go to the source of this Ganga. So we had reached a town called Gangotri, which was already high up in the Himalayas. We had gone a good way by jeep, but from Gangotri we needed to hike up to the Ganga source, which is another, I remember, 24 kilometers. I might be mistaken, plus minus, but it's you can do that easily in a day, that hike. So I remember that morning I was a little indisposed. I was a little sick. I'm a little bit ashamed to share my illness. It was, you know, loose motion, they call it in India. Whoever knows what it is, I will not say more what it is. It's very embarrassing. So my good friends had already started the ascent, the climb, and I came 2 hours later on the trek, and I walked alone. And as I was walking out of Gangotri, perhaps 2 kilometers up the trail, I looked down and I saw one of these spires, temple spires, with a flag. It means it's in use. There are people there. So then I left the small path and walked down an even smaller path and came to a beautiful ancient temple. I remember it was covered with some green moss. And I went inside the temple, like many Himalaya temples, was covered with carpets because it can be a little cold in the night. And I went to the altar. As an interest, what altar do they have? And this, I looked at the altar. And again this problem came up. do not know why these monks think that God is present on the altar. I see figures made from brass. I have not resolved it. So I was sitting like this when all of a sudden the entrance darkened. That meant someone was coming in, but then it became bright again, the light. It meant someone had passed through the entrance, but I had no mind of people coming in and out. I was just sitting there and said, I have faith that you are present in the heart of everyone. I feel sometimes your direction in my heart. I have faith also that you are beyond this world in a spiritual way which the mind cannot understand. But that you are here on the altar, please, I need a sign, I need something. So as I was being in this mood, my head became wet. I thought first perhaps the roof is not safe or not, how do you say in English, it's leaky perhaps. Then my shoulder becomes wet. Then I decided to look around and I saw a most surprising vision. There was an old man who had come with the help of someone else. I couldn't understand immediately why. But then I noticed this old man was blind, stark blind. Yet there were tears coming out of his eyes as he stood before the altar doing his prayers. I looked, I went a little to the side, but he was comfortable to stay there. His assistant did not bring him further to where I had been sitting earlier. They were remaining there. And he was crying, this blind man. After some time, the assistant took this old man, he was gray-haired, and led him again out of the temple. The entrance darkened when they passed through and it became bright again. And I put this on hold in the memory bank. You know, I didn't think of it any longer. I decided to continue my trek. I left it without thinking much about it. But I would have a second meeting that totally transformed me. I didn't know at that time. So I did the trekking. Many things happened. I met Tamal Bihari, who had a stick. He was a yogi, Tamal Bihari. He had a stick. He gave me the stick, and then he told the stick, fly. The stick went up, and I was hanging on the stick. I said, Tamal Bihari, enough of these yogic games. Let me come down here. I met many wonderful people. I caught up with a travel group. I stayed overnight in a cave. There were many wonderful experiences on that trek. Maybe one day we have more time and I can share my slides from this time. But finally I went down again, and when I came to the temple with the spiral and the little, I believe, yellow or red flag, one of these two colors, I remember, I decided, let me again go into this little temple. Perhaps I meet the old man again. So as I went down, I saw a man coming in my direction. He looked a little modern. I addressed him. Do you speak English? And he said, yes, I do. How can I help you? And I said, you know, I came earlier on my way up to the source of Mother Ganga. And I met this, I was sitting there and I had a little irritating meeting, not irritating, a meeting which I can't put really into, I can't understand it. I saw a blind man coming before the altar. The English speaking man said, what did he do? I said, well, he couldn't see anything, but he cried. And I'm wondering, why did he cry? Oh, said this was Ganga Das, the English speaking man told me. Ganga Das is a saint who is worshipped here in the area. He is really amazing. He is blind since youth, totally blind. There was many people offered him a cure to make eye surgery. But Ganga Das always said, no, he doesn't want an eye surgery. I'm interested to meet saints. Can I meet him? And the Indian says, this is a good time. He sees visitors at this time. You can immediately come with me. So I went, this English-speaking person brought me into a little house, and there was the same saint whom I had seen before, who cried before the altar. And I said, Merenam Sachinandan Swami. At that time I was not yet a Swami. My name is Sachinandan Meredesh Germany. I'm from Germany. This is my country. And then I didn't know much more than I said to the English-speaking person. Can you translate? Because you always have to introduce yourself first. That's polite. So I gave a short introduction. And this older man, gray hair, gray beard, totally blind, was listening. Then he called one assistant and said, Chai, give him tea. And I said, I cannot drink black tea. I have this regulation. And he answered, Samsta, I understand. I can see that. I can see that. He said, I can see this. He was very blind. So I said, I brought a question. The other day you came into the temple room and you cried. So he became embarrassed and he did not want to speak about this. Then I said, I have another question. I heard that you are blind since you are young, but that you have dismissed everyone who wanted to organize an eye surgery for you. And at that moment, this old man started to become emotional. Finally, he spoke. He spoke for a long time. What he said is, "What can these two eyes see? The eyes of matter. They cannot see God. I don't need such eyes. I only need eyes to see Ram." Ram is the deity of the Lord. This is wonderful. I am very respectful. But I said, "Can I please ask a question? I have the feeling that perhaps you can help me. If you say you do not need material eyes, you need only spiritual eyes, which are not dependent on these type of eyes. And if you are very blind, why did you go to the altar every morning?" I had heard that he does this every morning. He goes there before the altar. Because all you see is, and all what is there is a material form, made of metal and so on. And then Ganga Das spoke. He spoke even longer than his first answer. He said to me, "The form which is on the altar cannot be seen with these eyes. The form which is on the altar can be seen only with the eyes of the spiritually awakened heart." And he quoted a verse which I knew, "Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santasa Deva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti." This text, or Sanskrit text, is a very ancient text that says, only if the eyes are smeared with the balm of love is it possible to see the Supreme Lord who's there in everyone's heart and beyond. So as he said this, he said, as he spoke about this, he said, "Now look again." What, look again? "Go in the temple and look again." So I went in the altar, before the altar, and my dear everyone, at that time, something happened. I started to see with the eyes of my heart, which had been opened by the merciful touch or the merciful intervention of Ganga Das. I went into the same temple room, the same room where there were old carpets. Saw the exact same altar, but I did see something entirely different, because a new set of eyes had been opened through the contact with Ganga Das. I saw the most beautiful form, the most beautiful divine presence. I felt I can only say it like this, streams of light, rays of light, of mercy. Mercy is so unconcrete. Of kindness, of compassion, of empowerment coming from the altar. And I have no doubt this has happened due to my meeting a genuine saint who was a genuine bhakta of Lord Ram. a few days ago, or was it a week ago? Exactly a week ago, actually, we had Ram Navami, the appearance day of Lord Ram, and I had given a lecture in our community about Ram. I had made it a point to speak in our ashram during the lunch time when we all take our meal together again about Lord Ram to the two inmates in the ashram. But I made it very clear. I said, what do I know about these things? What can I speak about these things? What can I understand about these things if the knowledge is not coming from the head into the heart? If it does not touch the heart and change the heart so that my spiritual vision, my spiritual eyes are open. So I said, on this day, before I say anything about Ram, I remember all the devotees of Lord Ram whom I have met. And the first and foremost devotee who was in my mind was Ganga Das. Although I would talk at that time about him, I will always think about Ganga Das, who helped me to bring the theoretical knowledge into the practical knowledge. We speak about this in a relationship to our gurus. We say, by their grace, one can cross the ocean of material suffering. We speak about this opening of our vision, which is a true spiritual miracle, in relationship to the Bhagavad Gita. Te shang satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. That is when I didn't find the right verse. I was today at the doctor, so my memory is, so many things happened. I situated in their hearts, bring the torch light of knowledge by which my devotees can see everything. No? This is important. So grace, either from saints or from the Lord himself, can open our spiritual eyes so that we can see spiritual experiences every day and wherever we are. And whenever it's necessary. Here it is. Te shamvi vanu kampa tam aham agyana yam tamaha. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So I have spoken. I'm looking here at the time. I have seen already Michael. He has encouraged you to field your question. We will have now 15 minutes for questions and answers in the main group. Then our talented Hari Prasad will tell us how to continue. But please, if there are any questions, ask them now.
Yes. Thank you for this, Sajjanandan Swami. I'm wondering, how do we receive the blessings from saints, or like qualify ourselves to receive those blessings?
There are three ways traditional ways that guarantee us the blessings of the saints. And I seem to have done one. The first is we offer our services. The second is we put relevant inquiries before them. Relevant, they relate to our situation as it is. And the third is the general attitude which carries these two practical ways. It's an attitude of submission, of wanting to learn from them. See, you could be offering service but have no proper attitude. In other words, your outside could be right, but your inside could be not appropriate. Or you can even ask the proper inquiries, but your inside could be still closed or so on. But if you bring these three together, then you will obtain by their mercy this, you will make the shift. Casey, I do know you, so I will speak also personally to you. I think we all know, and perhaps you also know, this gap between what we know and what we can actually do. And believe me, powerful blessings of saints can close that gap. We hear an example of this in a very, very important work in our Vaishnava tradition. We actually, in Bhakti, we have so much ancient and well-researched, beautiful literature. It's the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where one student learns from another master, Gop Kumar or Swarup. And at the end, Swarup sees he has talked and talked and talked, but the breakthrough has not happened. And then he chooses to give his mercy to this student, and boom, it. I'm sorry, I can only give such an American expression. Boom. No, it suddenly awakens in his heart. And this is the whole key to our spiritual life. We can make advancement to a certain level in our spiritual life. We can change our diet and make it more favorable for spiritual life by consequently removing meat products products where violence has been exerted to a large degree from our diet. Yes, we can join the 5M club and rise early. Yes, we can do yoga and breathing exercises which make our body and mind favorable for our spiritual life. We can visit many lectures. There's so many online now that it's very interesting lectures. We can practice austerities. We can practice celibacy. We can do all kinds of things and do everything right. But if we have not received the blessings, we will not understand, or will not, and it's not a matter of understanding, we will not perceive, it's really a matter of perception, Casey, spiritual reality of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, again and again, the Shastras say that it's good to have the association of great souls. And do you have a pen and a paper or something to make notes? So I will direct you to two verses. I know Casey, and I know not all the books she reads, but some of the books she reads. So you will find this in the Bhagavatam. Please note down. First canto, 18th chapter, text 13, 1.18.13, plus the identical verse, 4.30.34. And I request you to read the... there are two purports, two explanations, so they are different. Nice.
Thank you.
I thank you. And I have seen the picture in your room. It is from the Bhagavad Gita. I have seen. Good. So let us go to the next question, please.
Don, please, you may ask your question. Thank you, Hari. Satchinanda Swami, hello. It's an honor to be with you today. And thank you for your stories and your wisdom. My question is on spiritual experience. You, last week when you talked about the cobras and the parrot, and today when you talked about Ganga Das, there seems to be an awakening or insight that happens in the present at the time of the experience. And my question is this, is it possible to have an experience and then come to realize it as a spiritual experience in retrospect? Is it possible through reflection, prayer, and meditation to find spiritual inspiration or significance where one did not recognize it immediately? Or is this to engage in fantasy thinking? Thank you.
I thank you very, very much. I think your good name is John. Is that correct? I see at least this name here.
Yes.
Good, John.
Yes.
There is a fine line between spiritual experiences, and you speak about one particular experience or understanding an experience, and fanciful or wishful imagination. That fine line is there when you it's always there. I have seen a lot of spiritual bypassing where people are not willing to look at a certain blockage, a certain contamination, a certain obstacle in their life that needs to be addressed, and just imagine themselves into a spiritually advanced position. These are usually pretenders, that's a strong word, but please forgive me, I'm not so good in English, it's only my second language. So yeah, when you bypass the obstacle which are in the way to a genuine spiritual awakening, and then you just imagine yourself into a position which is not yours, it is not so nice. I want to now, this is general, now let us go into your particular question. And you are concerned about going into an experience or remembering an experience which you had. In other words, it's in retrospect, it's behind you in time, and you go again into this, and then you might realize, "Ooh, there was something in there which I could not recognize at the time." Yes, there are such experiences, and again, in one of the really masterworks of spiritual, it's a spiritual classic, it's Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a saint called Madhavendra Puri, who in the evening, some boy comes to him and offers him a glass of milk to drink, and he notices the boy is extraordinarily beautiful and there's something special about him, but he looks very much like an ordinary cowherd boy with a blanket over his head against the sun. And yes, so the evening progresses, he drinks the milk which is given to him, and he finds, this is an extraordinary taste which leaves me in a very ecstatic condition of life, my God. And he then goes back in his mind to the meeting when the cowherd boy had given him this glass of milk, and he notices at that time something which he had not noticed when he initially received the glass. He understands that this is Krishna, whom he has been worshipping all his life, who came to him slightly disguised, that it was not immediately obvious. And I have made a lot of such experiences which I only could decipher or understand in retrospect. These experiences often happen in extraordinary circumstances where you are not in your normal mind, so to say. They can happen also, and this I want to encourage you with this, at sacred places. They are mentor, the sacred places are ideal places for making such experiences, which as they happen may not yet be clear to you what is happening, but after some time you see, my God, ooh, yes. Yes, it is possible. And perhaps, John, if you become spiritually more advanced, I mean, I know you are have a level of advancement that makes you most probably different from many people. But if you become more advanced and you look in retrospect, you will see many, many such things which were directly arranged. I have, which you could, however, not see at the time when you made them, when you were not on that level of consciousness. I have spoken with many monks who later, when they were older and more mature, looked in their lives and could understand, now I understand. This was arranged. Wow, I couldn't understand it at that time. I even went against it. I was complaining. But now I understand. But that is usually this happens when one is a little bit further down the path. Or when you are already an accomplished saint like Madhavendra Puri, it may be that the divinity, that the divine person, that God has disguised himself. He doesn't want to be recognized by a casual onlooker. So, like this. But thank you for your very insightful question. I know this is a question where you have something in mind. I can see that and feel that even through the computer. And I wish you all the best to decipher that particular instance or those particular instances which you have in mind. And you can also pray. That is good. You can meditate. And then that internal firework, which I was speaking in the beginning, may happen even in retrospect. Because, John, for spirituality, there are no constraints of past, present, and future. They easily go against these time compartments which hold our perception captured, you know, in past, present, future. Yes. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
A little close here. For those who need to take off, we completely understand. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you, Satchinandana Swami, for what you've shared. It's incredibly uplifting. It's palpable in this Zoom room. We're so grateful, and we're excited to be back again for one more story and then one more experience of more questions in the coming 2 weeks. So thank you, everyone, and please stay on if you're able.
Yes, I already have the next experience for next Wednesday. It will be very uplifting. I was doing this experiencing leaving the body and seeing something very, very important when I was in that out of body situations. Call the President of America to watch that episode. I say it in a loving way. I don't mean any political. I'm not informed.
That's great. Thank you. We will go to my mom.
Thank you so much, Satchinandan and Swami. What a pleasure to be in the company of somebody so elevated and soak the wisdom. And you spoke about something that is very relevant for me, coming from a similar background. One of the five principles that we have in Bhakti includes deity worship, and that's an obstacle for me as well, coming from a place where you were not supposed to have an image of the Lord. I am still at the stage where I don't even have the theoretical knowledge. So can you help us explain what was the knowledge in your head that was transmitted to your heart in that experience?
Yes. The knowledge in my head was, this is the Lord. I have a little cough. And my head said, no, this can't be. And the heart was, I can see it now, but I don't see it with these eyes. I see it with the eyes of the spiritual awakened heart. Tsipi, there is something that might help you that I heard later and that helped me to confirm my realization. There are actually three ways to see the deity on the altar. Three ways. Let me start with the second one, because I feel that might be closest to you. It's the intellectual way, where you see pictures, deities, as representing something divine. Let me give you an example. At least here in Germany, we have the cars which deliver the mail, and they all have a postal horn on it. I think in America, I have seen the before the houses, people have these boxes with the postal sign on there. I do not, yes or no? Yes, yes. So we have all the things in Germany which are connected to the post are having this horn on them. The reason is that in old times when the postman would come into the village, he would make a horn, it had a certain sound, and then everyone knew, okay, the postman has come, let's collect our mail from him. So this postal horn is not at all the post office and its vast, vast organization, you know, with trucks, with airplanes, with you know, these big offices sometimes where letters come in from all over the world and they're quickly sorted out, and this goes here, this goes there, you know, the it's only the postal horn is only the representation of mail delivery, and I think later telephone came also to it. It's a representative of a whole delivery system. It is not identical with it. So that is the first way of seeing the deity. You see him as a representative. He's not identical with God. It's just a representative, something which reminds us as much as the postal horn reminds us of the post office. And this on. The second way of seeing the deity is the impersonal way. You think, yes, he is presented as a person with eyes and feet and hands that hold the flute in Krishna's sense. But really, there is only one spiritual reality, the all-pervading God who's not a person. He's just like air, which is all-pervading, going, extending everywhere, so that Lord is ever present, always present. Yes. And then there is the third way, third way which I think Ganga had and Ganga opened in me, Ganga Das, that person of whom I was talking. And that is the Bhava way. Bhava means a spiritual emotion. It can be translated as devotional love. And through these things, through these you can see. My spiritual master gave an example. When the mother sees her little infant child, oh, the mother's love goes so much. But when a speaker, let us say, who gives a lecture, sees the child who is always making children noise, he thinks, oh no, it's such a disturbance, this little guy, you know, I wish the mother would take him out. And the children, they sometimes, their fragrance is not always so encouraging, and so on. But the mother will, my boy starts to speak. He starts to respond to the, perhaps he understands the lecture better than me, you know, and she sees through other eyes, the eyes of a mother, So when you see, this is just something to give an idea what bhava could mean. Here in spiritual terms, it's a little different because the mother is perhaps a little bit partial to this one child and doesn't see all the other children like this. But when you see with the eyes of devotion, Tsepi, a total different scenario will reveal itself to your good eyes. Yeah, this is. Thank you. It was also very nice to see you briefly. Good. Is there another person?
Arastu.
Hare Krishna, Sachinandana Swami. I'm so happy to be here and to listen to the last few weeks, what you've shared, and today. I'm appreciating a theme that, and Parastu, by the way.
Yes, I have recognized you, Parastu. I've also seen you. In the past, I've seen you, and you gave me a wonderful notebook, which already is filled. Next time I come to New York, if there is another notebook like this available. Yes, Parastu.
Thank you. Makes me happy to hear. Thank you so much. I'm appreciating so much how in both this week and last week, you were talking about how you were praying. You had a struggle you were grappling with, and you were asking for a sign in both cases. So one question around that is how often is that happening for you? Are you always, there always some question, the grapple? And so that's one question. Should I share the other, which had to do with the transmission?
Well, I think you can have two questions. So let me first answer the first one.
Thank you.
Questions have different types of questions. Let me just mention two. One is doubtful questions. Can't be like this. They're more like doubts. And then there are other questions where you don't really have a doubt, but you lack information and you want to go deeper. And this second question is, I think, never ending. The second type of question. Doubts can be answered, and then you can say, okay, I trust now that although I may not understand everything right now, but it will become clear after some time. This has been my experience so far. So, these other clarifying questions, they are not stopping if you continue to engage with the subject of spirituality. You get to hear new things which are still to be explored by you. They are not yet clear. And then you look for further clarification. And yes, there is a blessing in spiritual circles. May this curiosity of yours never stop. I have that blessing. I think I'm eternally curious. Yes. Your second question.
Okay, I was just in trying to understand the experience of meeting with Ganga Das and being in that room, and you really painted the space for us. And so I was wondering about in what language was this transmission occurring?
In what language? This is a wonderful question. In the first opening verse of the Bhagavad Purana, we find the initial student, Brahma, and it is said there that this knowledge became revealed to him in the heart. Tena Brahma Hridaye Adikavaye Mushanti Yatsuraya. It's a beautiful text. So it is revealed in the heart. And perhaps the language is sometimes an English language, or Gangadas spoke to me in Hindi and there was this English translator, but the revelation of it was independent of the language. It came in the heart, which is an altogether different type of language. It is some, the Greeks called it noetic experience. It is something which has an inner and compelling clearness to you that makes it very, very crystal clear for you. So yes, therefore we usually say about our spiritual master, he opened my darkened eyes. Darkened means they're blind, like a blind man has a darkness, with a torchlight of knowledge. No, it's an inner seeing which happens there. Good.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for opening the torchlight of knowledge, and the upbuild teachers are doing the same so much all the time, just sharing the light. And so I'm very grateful to you and to this community and everyone listening. Hare Krishna.
Yes. I appreciate your kindness and the kindness of everyone. But please know I'm just sharing gifts. I'm not a special person. I received some gifts and some knowledge. It's very important for me to say this. I'm still wanting to fill the gap between what I know and what I do. That I'm also working on that. Good. So yes, is there another question?
Amanda, if you are there, you may ask your question.
Thank you so much for your time. I grew up in the evangelical Christian faith, and I have been searching, I think, the past couple years in my faith. And I don't think it's a coincidence that you talked about forgiveness, because I think it may be a blockage between me and the divine or God. And I'm just wondering, there's a person I love very much, but he's very unaware and he continues to hurt. And in the Bible, they say, you know, if someone strikes in the cheek, turn the other cheek. I'm wondering, in your faith, how do you deal with a person who continues to hurt you, whether conscious or unconscious, and how do you forgive them so that it doesn't block you being able to love others?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Amanda, for asking such a relevant question and such a burning question for you. I'm trying to bring a whole seminar of 7 days into no, but I will be able to give something practical, because it should be practical. I would first of all try to go into the shoes of the other person. Why are they doing that? Why are they saying this? Or whatever comes from them that is hurtful. Yeah, that will take a lot of the emotional thing out. Very often you will find that there is a need in them that they try to fulfill in this way. Perhaps the need to get attention, perhaps the need to take revenge because they feel you have hurt them personally, and so on. And I have always seen, when you understand a little bit more what is moving the other person, you can forgive them. We had in our ashram a little incident about cheese. You know, there were some members who wanted to eat cheese, but the cheese did not belong to... The cheese was meant for something else, and it was untouchable cheese, so to say. And somehow a whole thing happened around the cheese. And I was there in the midst of it, and I was asking myself, what's going on here? We are usually people who are a little bit more aware. We don't struggle for cheese, you know. And there's enough to eat. No need to have a conflict over cheese and so on. But then I did understand needs were there. And those who, it was not a quarrel, a disagreement or whatever it was. And then I could understand and be, hopefully be part of the solution. Which was, I'm giving a very small example, but usually when you understand why is the person so worked up about this? Why am I a thorn in his or her eye? You will find there is a need which the person has. And then they are acting unconsciously, you know, and do things, say things, just because they are in pain. I learned this, you know, as a lecturer, there can be nothing more disquieting than when a mother brings her baby to the lecture and the baby is from minute number one to midway in the lecture, just very noisy, and you want to create a meditative atmosphere, perhaps even guide people into a meditative experience, and the child goes all the time, and I have no children, no physical children, and I'm thinking, why this is not good for anyone. It's not good for the baby to be here. The baby is it's not good for the mother, because the mother cannot pay attention because the child is so loud. It's not good for me. I'm losing my red thread. It's not good for the audience. And then in the past, I have sometimes stopped my lecture and said, listen, my dear mother, there is a problem here which needs to be addressed. And I could, and I understood. And afterwards, the mother was angry at me and said, I can never forgive you this. I can never forgive you what you did. Before everyone, you showed me to be an insensitive person. For me, it seemed to be very clear. It was not good for anyone. But here was a need, which the person might not have been aware. Maybe she wanted, she starved so much to be in a spiritual gathering, and this was the only way, and she needed her child, she couldn't give the child into child care, and so on. So I would try to look for the causes, and sometimes, Amanda, we can always forgive a person because they often don't know why they are like this, then they are pained and so on. But I keep on saying this, sometimes it's good to move a little in the distance to solve what we could call karmic entanglement. That means, in more Christian terms, entanglement by fate, you know. And sometimes it is best for everyone to remove that karmic entanglement and move into the distance. Amanda, if I would, our time is over here, but I can only encourage you, try to learn the art of forgiveness and apply it, because otherwise that person or that situation which you cannot forgive will stay with you in your most important room, the space of your heart, the sacred space of the heart, and it will make everything bitter for you and so on. So this needs to, you need to get this out like a thorn, which you need to get out. It is priority. I don't know, you must have many priorities, but one of your priorities to get it out, because all movement will remain painful as long as the thorn is in the flesh. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best, Amanda.
So much.
I will now turn back to our talented host. I think you will need to close the session. Before our Mr. Hari will close the session, I want to say goodbye to everyone. I have not invited you to specific sessions. I think the upcoming one, that is next Wednesday, is worth your attendance. There will be a total different category of a spiritual experience, which we will explore, look at, question, and do all kinds of things with. So I'm saying goodbye here, and hope to see as many as possible of you for next Wednesday. Goodbye.